Welcome to the Shabbat show. Shabbat Shalom, everyone. Hoping you the best of the seventh. The foreshadowing of Sukkah, when we'll all camp out with Yahweh as family. I have Kirk on the line.
Good evening.
He's going to be helping me tonight. And for some reason, I'm hearing an echo in my phone. Does somebody have a phone on speaker or something?
Did that go away?
Anyway, I also have a caller on 214. Is that you, JB? I guess it isn't. Okay. Well, we're going to get started here. And we're going to go back to the Mizmor, or Psalm 163. And Yahweh starts us out by saying, I genuinely hate, shun, and am totally hostile, electing to consistently despise and continually denigrate and disparage, ta'ab, deception. But I love your Torah. And I understand, Kirk, you have some insights for us, and I'm going to sit back and listen to them there.
Okay. Well, what I just did was, in the last few hours, I was looking at the word Torah. And as you know, when Yada breaks it down, he breaks it down into about nine different associated words or roots and so forth. There's the Torah and the Torah, Torah as a title and Torah. And so what I thought I might do is go through the things that he said, and in each one of them I was going to cover as well what the ancient lexicons would say, or the lexicons devoted to ancient understanding, what they would have, how they defined the words. And it's quite interesting. And the thing that's so important about this to me is the simple fact that coming from a Christian frame, you've got the biggest argument, of course, is Paul saying that the Torah is dead and it has no meaning and it certainly can't save and that. But they establish it immediately that it's all law and laws that have to be obeyed. And you would think you would find that in the Word, or certainly in the letters as well. Because in the ancient, of course, as we know, in the ancient Hebrew pictographs, that tells the story with each little word is as well. And I didn't want to go too terribly long on this, but I thought it would just, as I did two or three of them this afternoon, I kept doing a few more, and it was stunning. And the first breakdown of Torah is Tow, which is T-O-W, the way it's spelled, and the definition that Yada used in his section up here is enduring, sign, and written. And, of course, just to confirm that, it's exactly what it is in the ancient Hebrew. It is a T, and a wa, and it just simply means nothing more than, well, it means two things. It means mark or a sign, and it also means a desire. So nothing still. We haven't, as we go along the thing, I'm afraid you're not going to find any law in this thing. When you break down the Torah, T-O-W-R-A-H, that refers to just simply the title. The title of the five books is called the Torah. And that same, when that's translated that way, is also in ancient writings, is translated as a Torah, but it simply is defined as teaching, or the direction one is to take in life. And that's exactly what we've been saying, or certainly what Yahweh has been saying the whole time, and what we've been repeating. And then the second, one of the other meanings for Torah, and this is a different word that's translated. The reason they're different words, even though it might still say Torah, is because they appear in different places throughout the Torah, Prophets, and Psalms. And the third one, the Torah, is the simply in this context would mean is translated the way of treating people. And of course, when you look at that the same way, it's in the ancient concept of it, is manners, as what is defined and what gives us what gives borders to people, but basically how they act. So the way of treating people and how we act, once again, the same definition. So then I kept going, and then there's the tour, which is like T-U-W-R, and that one is to give us means to explore, to seek, to find, and to choose. And once again, in the ancient concept of it, it was a outline of a borders to walk, to travel an area from border to border. And when I read about border to border, I kept thinking about, well, that's Abraham. Remember, Abraham was asked to go from farthest point here and mark off his land. And don't be afraid. You can jump in any old time here. But I'll just proceed on. Go ahead.
I think the more we can hammer home that Torah is not law, the better. The legalistic look at the Torah is exactly the view that the rabbis took, and mm-hmm. so that would be exactly the view we would want to be in opposition to. And it's not just for the sake of being in opposition to them; it's because they're wrong. That's not what the Torah is about. So,
no,
you know.
And the funny thing is, you can't find it. You can't find it there. I mean, it just, you have to, in order for the lexicons, and when you go through these different lexicons, and in order to find the definition as obey and law, there's no word for obey. There's to find these things in there, you can only find them if they put them in there, because the further back you go, they're not there. I mean, it's just not, none of these words, none of these stems or one of these roots, I should say, are in any way related to the modern concept or the rabbinical or the Christian concept of law. Law and
spirit. Well, yeah, that's kind of the mistake that people make, isn't it? Haven't
mm-hmm.
we found that? I mean, when people do translations, the mistake they continually make is going back to the most recent corruption, rather than going back to the root of the word.
Yeah.
And the whole idea of going out and digging for this information is so that we get the word to ourselves and to others and the family as unadulterated as possible.
Yeah,
and go where the words lead, as opposed to, you know, a bunch of preconceived religious concepts that have, you know, basically, which were used to destroy the covenant, to certainly
mm-hmm.
damage it horribly.
Well, the only thing they can do is, now you have to understand, and even when I'm looking through a bunch of lexicons, and really I'm such a novice, so I mean, but even this limited frame of reference that I have and the limited library that I have to go through these things, and I do go online occasionally with different things and check those out as well, just to get a different, make sure I'm covering as many bases as I can cover. The problem is, and it becomes readily noticeable to me, when you're working from a lexicon and you know it's there to support the publisher who is also publishing the Bible or publishing, or their customers are the Christians in order to buy their Bibles and to buy their lexicons and so forth, and they have to, somewhere down the line on each one of these definitions, you'll start to see a commandment or obey. You know, but it's just not there. I mean, I go through bunches of them, and they just aren't there, you know, until they put them in a little bit later.
Yeah, they're just twisted concepts that people decided to add and say, hey, we'll go with that.
I think it was done on purpose. I mean, you have to support. If you're going to stand up and say that Paul is true, then you've got to have something that what he was saying is the law, you can't obey it, and da 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 da. You can't do that unless you have some of that information also in your lexicon. So they put it in there.
Yeah. It's always to advance religion, I know, but I have seen Dead Sea Scrolls supposedly translated that read word for word like a English based Bible. Right down to Lord. And I mean, we know Lord was never written in there, but I was wondering, this is Dead Sea Scrolls translation right here. And I said, yeah, it sounds like, they just decided to say, well, the Dead Sea Scrolls mirror an English-based Bible, and nothing could be, you know, further from the truth. But, yeah, please continue there.
Okay.
This is enlightening.
Okay. Next way to break down Torah would be to from Yara. And, of course, Yara, as like Jerusalem, is the source from which teaching flows. It would be the definition if you look it up. And when you look up the older version, you've got from the pictographs, it simply means they would think of it in terms of to point the way one is to walk in life. Duh. I mean, if that's not teaching, if not you're helping them and you help your children, you help somebody along the way, that's hardly obey the rules and stay on the road. You know, it means to do just what we're claiming here is to teach, always to teach. Then we have tube, and T-U-W-B would be to provide answers which facilitate restoration, to return, to respond, and to reply. And that's what Yada writes in his breakdown and under Torah. And then if I look up that same word, in an ancient one, we have teacher who informs and instructs. It also means turning your back on a previous state or a previous place. It means to turn back, to travel, to turn, to return. Well, guys, that's to me, that's just great. So once again, it's not law. It's not things that condemn you. It's teaching in order to help you find your way home. So now we have the next one. I think there's about three more. So if y'all bear with me, we have Tob, T-O-W-B. And when that appears, it should have been translated, as Yada said, to be loved, to be good, and to be pleasing. Now, when you go to that, let's see, 20, there we go, Tob, it means in the most ancient understanding lexicons, the best I can find sources, it says to be good, being functional, well, pleasing, and better. So all these roots are still saying the same thing, and over and over and over. Now we have Tohorah, or T-O-H-O-R-A-H. And that one is to be joyful, beneficial, healing, right, causing to be loved and accepted. Same thing over here. We have to be clean, purifying. Well, that's all we had in the ancient ones. And then if we go to TOR, T-O-W-R, let me see if I can get this one. We have providing opportunity to change. That is to your change in thinking, your change in attitude, your change in direction. And then when we look up that same word with the ancient pictographs and we get the oldest definitions, it says to turn, as in turn from to. That's every breakdown of everything that I know that I could look up to find the word.
And none of them have a little judge with a gavel and a cop dragging somebody off and throwing them in a prison cell, or tickets being written, or
now, if you
laws
want, if
being
you want,
enforced.
No, sir, if you want that, you got to put it in yourself.
Yeah,
who wants it?
Who wants it? We have a caller, by the way, on 214-882-4212. Is that you, Herman?
Hey, Larry.
Hi,
how are you?
I'm good. And
this is Mike in Texas. I was just listening in.
Oh, you're just listening in. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I'll go ahead and just take you off the. I didn't know if you had a question for Kirk or myself or anything.
No, but I really enjoy Kirk's pictograph explanations.
Well, thank you. Thank you.
I really enjoyed the shows this week with you, Kirk. So keep up the good work.
Oh, thank you. Well, I'm the least of the experts. I might be a spurt. I don't think there's no X involved. But they are fun. I started doing them just because he gave me another little angle added to see. I never really encountered a language that had letters that actually meant something. I know you have the Egyptian writings and so forth, and they mean something besides just a sound. But all of a sudden, it just occurred to me, boy, these things, this is kind of deep, and you could actually break it down. And the more I did them, Mike, the more I did them, the more it was just fascinating. If it's too long and too involved to get into all the different pictographs of the ones that I just covered, but each one of them are all so descriptive, and they kind of tell exactly the same story. If you were just, if you had no education other than looking at the pictures, after a while, if somebody just pointed out this is a picture of a man, this is a picture of a head, and it's thinking, or this is a signpost, all the letters, all the words absolutely describe what we're talking about here with all the definitions. So you cannot find a different story no matter how deep you go. And to me, that was just incredibly satisfying. And I wish I was a lot better at it. But little by little, you know, it's not a race. We're all walking. I kind of view this as walking down a path with all my friends, and we kind of observe left and right what's all that we're seeing and just enjoy the trip. I mean, that's, to me, it's just fun.
Yeah, when you came up with the eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth from Yahusha's name,
yeah,
I don't know how many times I looked at that, you know, in the Paleo-Hebrew spelling, and I never saw that. So,
well,
but once you explained that, it was obvious.
Well,
I think that's exactly why it is written that way. Eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth. I think that's exactly what they meant. Yeah.
Yeah, what you find is so many meanings, and you can just, like the little thing about, whether it's a pathway or something, it's just all of it is leading through Passover. It's all leading through an upright. You have a lot of these words have the upright pole. When it says a mark, of course, you know, that's a tall, and a tall can be just a mark. It could be an X, but it's, the tall is described like a T, and the T is the upright pole that supports the house, and you have a BS, and by the time you're through, you go, well, gosh, you know, this is so simple, you can't fall off the floor on this thing, but they do. I mean, you have to really twist everything.
Have you ever looked at the word bazaar by chance?
Bazaar?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
No, if I have it, I don't recall it right away. But
well, you know, we'd had this big falling out. There's those of us who observe the Torah, and then apparently there's people that actually do certain parts of it and not others.
Mm-hmm.
You know, well, I'm not sure why, but that's apparently the position. But
yeah.
I this is kind of an interesting breakdown here, because Yahweh, and this is in Dabarim, I just want to throw this out there, Dabarim 14:8 actually.
Mm-hmm.
And what he says is, and therefore the wild boar, that's Hos Chasar, the wild boar, indeed, it has a hoof divided.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you see, you know, he was leading us towards being separated out, divided out, you know, so
mm-hmm.
we're set apart. Has a hoof right. divided. And, you know, one thing we do know about the Christians, they do recognize Yahusha, although they don't recognize why he's here. And they change his name. They are aware of that much. So it does have a hoof divided. Here's what it says, but not a cud.
Mm-hmm.
It is unclean according to you. Now,
yeah.
In other words, they haven't chewed over the words. They don't realize that when Yahusha said, I'm here fulfilling Torah, they didn't even consider the 3 days he was fulfilling were the three of Moed, Mikra, of Pesach, Matz, and Bikurim.
Yeah.
Now, get this next line.
Okay.
If you really want to see what he's talking about here. And he says, from Basar, Min Basar, from Basar, which means the preaching and publishing
mm-hmm.
of creatures like them, you should not continually consume. And with their stupid and contentious decaying dead body,
that
would be Jesus,
yeah.
the walking zombie, you should literally not make contact on an ongoing basis.
Yeah.
Now, do you think he's talking about wild boars there? Because You know, and you can chime in, Mike. I just don't see Bizarre coming from a wild boar because I haven't known them to publish as much as a coloring book or make any statements to anybody.
No.
Yeah, that's an interesting one there. I just wanted to bring that up. I'll just kick back now.
But, you know, when that discussion was going on, Larry and Mike, it was very obvious. I was talking with Yala, you know, it's not what you put in your mouth, it's what comes out of it. It's just the biggest danger. And, I mean, listen, you can die quicker eating sugar than bacon and a tomato sandwich. Come on. So, I mean, but, yeah, there's some dangerous foods out there, but that's not the point. Yawa is not sitting around worried about your dietary habits.
I think Yawa should say something about if you got a physical problem, you need a doctor. If you're sick of the spirit, you need me. Didn't he say something like that?
Something like that. He certainly, but the whole point is, you know, he's always attacking religion because that's the poison that kills us, and it kills us eternally. What's the serious issue? Which is the serious issue, and which is the one that, a lot of things I can't eat because as I've gotten older, I can't take dairy and so forth. So what? I mean, so you don't take them if it bothers you. If it makes you sick, don't do it. But that's not the big issue in life.
I don't know. It'd be kind of an issue if I couldn't eat ice cream from time to time.
Well,
but that's
just
me.
I miss that.
Me, you know.
Well, I can still eat some chocolate chip cookies.
From the preaching and publishing of creatures like them, you should not continually consume. And with their stupid, contemptuous, decaying, dead body, you should literally not make contact on an ongoing basis. Wow. I think that straightened it out. At least for me, it does. There's just no way around that. I just don't see how anybody gets around it. But anyway, I wanted to throw that out there and see what you guys thought of that. You know, Bizarre is a pretty good word.
I remember doing, as y'all were talking, as you and Yada, and I think James was on that program too, and y'all were talking for a couple of weeks on that, and I had some lexicons and stuff in my lap, and I kept going over every word that y'all were talking about, and I couldn't see where you could come up with different things than he did, you know, not that I'm, that he needs me to back him up, but as, you know, I think
what's happening is just exactly what you just went over, and this is it's an important topic because if you get somebody that says, "Okay, this is a familiar phrase, this must be what it says, and this is what we'll all learn," and it's not at all what it says. Mm-hmm. I mean, I've seen verses that are passages that are, you know, 23 words long, and 20 of them either don't exist or were added. So 20 of the 23 words are just flat out not even there.
Yeah, well, it took about the 6th century for the last 8 or 9 verses of Mark, you know, and not that that's not scripture, but if those witness writings, you know, there's a whole bunch of it. It was added at the very end. It had to be at least the 7th century, 6th or 7th century before they added that. I mean, they're wholesale, so many things that if you study those a little bit, I mean, people have put it right in everybody's face for years and nobody seems to care. You know, they just ignore it and keep on saying what you're saying.
Well, I had a guy really get fired up at me because he was running around touting advancing the Holy Bible. And that this is really the answer, and they should be taught in schools. He considered himself family. And I said, buddy, I said, Yahweh never named any books after a sun goddess and a sun god festival holy from India, Krishna's most important festival. I said, nobody, you know, Yahweh wouldn't do that, and further, he would not butcher his own words. I says, you know, what you're advancing here is what you should be telling people to stay away from.
Then he
immediately said, well, now I know why I hate you. Okay. You don't hate me. I love you for it, you know. Sets me apart.
Well, look at the verse you just read, Larry, Psalms 119, 163, and those are some, I don't know how much strong, more, how much more strongly you could say something than Dold is saying here when he says, I genuinely hate, shun, and am totally hostile. I mean, electing to consistently despise and continually denigrate and disparage deception. But I love your Torah. And he's saying that from his heart, not only from his own feelings and his own understanding, but he is inspired by Yah himself.
Yeah, well, it's astounding, though, because you've got people, and I mean, I'm just going to kick this can down the street a little bit. You've got people that claim they love the Torah, and they do the exact opposition to the Torah, mm-hmm. even by calling it law.
Yeah.
I see people call it law. They write obey. They, you know, commandments. They every other word is commandments. He commanded us to blah, 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 blah. You know, and I guess they never heard about free will. I mean, I don't know about commanding anybody.
Larry, these people, are they ignorant in the sense that they just haven't read enough or studied enough to...
Well, they've been at it 10 years. Some of them even know Paul's a fraud. Many of them know Paul is a fraud. They realize Paul's a fraud. But they just can't wrap their head around, you know, they still use words like faith.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Dorothy in her red slippers, faith. You know, I mean, it's just insane, some of it. And you know, it's one thing to say it and not think about it, but once somebody explains it to you half dozen times, you'd think you'd get over the idea that Torah's law and he commanded you to obey laws. You know, I don't know how in the world could you tell me, Kirk, how you could actually follow as far as not observing the Torah, mm-hmm. but actually doing the Torah. Could you do that today? Could you possibly?
Well, no one could for even the most obvious reasons. You know, how do you go to the temple if there's no temple? How do you do this? How do you do that? And I'm totally in the same camp with Yada and you. And this is about understanding. If you're teaching somebody, I'm a teacher. I may maybe just an art teacher, but I'm still teaching, conveying ideas and things. And I want the students to understand. I know they can't do what I'm asking them to do. I know they can't draw without putting in the hours. I know they can't get this stuff right, and they can't paint that well because and understand color. No matter how succinct I can put it, or how many demonstrations I can do, or how many portraits I can paint before them, and such and such and such. But the goal is to get them to start to understand, you know, till the gestalt comes on and they say, okay, now I see. And then you grow on that and grow on that, and that's what teachers do. So if this is teaching, and we just went through 9 different words where just about all of them said teaching, guidance.
Yeah, none of them said handcuffed, judge's gavel.
And nobody
said, I order you.
No forces, no coercion here. It's not... do this because I say so. It is a voluntary thing to learn. Come and learn. But if you're teaching someone from that frame of reference, you want their little eyes to light up, and you want them to see, and you want them to grow. And then you should be ecstatic as a teacher. You would be, or certainly like a father would be ecstatic, or mother, you'd be ecstatic that your children are starting to get it. So why would you expect them to do everything? They couldn't possibly learn all this. look how stupid Nicodemus was, and he knew the Torah. And he didn't get it. He didn't even understand it.
I look at how stupid I am, and I wouldn't suspect that Yahweh would suspect I would even know everything to do, much less be able to do it. And I don't think anybody else would either. I think part of the teaching of the Torah, at least from my viewpoint, from me seeing it, was giving them so much dues to do, they couldn't even possibly all be done.
No.
And if you really looked at it from that reference point, okay, I'm going to do this, and then I'm going to run and do that, then I'll do this, then I'll be ready for the next thing, you know, and I got to make sure to walk on eggshells the whole way through it. That you would, if you really gave it thought, you'd go, man, I am tired of this nonsense about now. I mean,
when the Torah was presented, I like to think back and try to understand it and from that standpoint. You've got 600,000 men, their wives and their children and extended family. They come out of the desert. They've been slaves for almost 400 years since Joseph was no longer remembered, and it was conquered when the southern king of Egypt came up and conquered the northern kingdom. So you've got 300 and wherever many years of total slavery. These are not people that have an education.
400. 400
well, there's 400
years.
Total, but I mean, they were okay for a while, you know, when Joseph was alive and before they got taken over.
We're talking centuries here. Yeah.
And let's say 375, and whatever the number is.
Longer than the United States has been around.
Longer than we've been here. Now,
yeah, look how long they got everybody stepping and fetching over here. So, yeah, okay.
So you've got total slaves. These are not well-educated people. They're not educated at all, unless they are educating themselves among themselves. They eat what they're given. If you're slaves, you eat what you're given, what's provided. So they have no idea about good nutrition or this or that. They have their own manners as they develop in any culture when you're kind of oppressed. Just like in a prison, there's all kind of things that go on in prisons and things, or any enslaved groups or whatever. So you've got all these people that have been called out now, drawn out by Moshe, and they don't know what's going on. They're not the smartest group ever. You can read that you can figure that out just by reading it. So they start out with a whole bunch of instructions because they don't know. They're starting at ground zero. So he's got to give them a lot of stuff and hit all these different points so they have some idea and something, and it's written down so they have some ideas of how to grow hygienically, whatever. So, I mean, for them, it's really, really, really important. And it's not so much the do's and don'ts. You're just dealing with a very uneducated crowd. So they got to start somewhere. So he started there. And he gave them just tons and tons of information that covered most everything. And he had people, Aaron and his sons and the rest of the Lowy, to guide them through all this. So, I mean, it's pretty vital at that point.
Well, if you're looking at it from that standpoint, that makes a certain amount of sense. You know, do this, do that. If you don't do this, you got to do that, on and on.
But we know how to use a bar of soap now. we're not under the same pressure, the same type of things. We know how to eat properly and what's good for you and what's not. So, you know, so those issues should not be a big issue. And the way they were then, so it's just a different context to me on who was saying what.
Well, yeah,
that might be
a food issue, but I'm just saying there were so many, so many different little, you know, do this, then you got to go, you got to have a turtle dove and a couple of doves.
Yeah. He wanted to tell the story right, so you know, from the priest standpoint, because they're doing symbols in order to teach once again.
Yeah, and those are all symbols. That's exactly right. And then that's how we observe the Torah. I can't imagine how anybody gets outside that and thinks that, they're going to be able to do the Torah. You know, I mean, what are you going to do on bring seven bulls with you and seven lambs and, you know, you're going to make this big giant.
And you're not even a farmer. Where are you going to get them?
I have no clue, see, and that's the thing. I don't think Yahweh expects much. My position is that he doesn't require a lot out of me, but he does expect me to take his words seriously, to scrutinize his words, and I think that's what he's requiring. It's hard, and I've said it before, I'll say it again, it's hard to send 35, words over a 3,500-year period of time. And still keep the concept there. We all played the game before where you're in a circle and somebody says something. By the time it gets around a room of 20 people, it's all screwed up. Imagine trying to send words over a 3,500-year period of time. I mean, really.
I'm amazed that they kept so much stuff so accurately in the Dead Sea Scrolls. Even when they changed it, they only just scratched out. Most of the time when they said Yahweh was changed to Lord, all they did was scratch it out. So it was very easy to go back and say, well, guys.
Or wrote above it. I mean, that's what they do in Torahs today, even in the Masoretic text. They just write Lord over it, which is really crazy, writing Lord above Yahweh's name. Whoever did that is a complete ass. He calls them worse than that.
Mm-hmm.
I guess we'll go on to one 164. Yeah.
Far away.
Seven is the promise, and that's Sheba or Shaba. Mm-hmm. During the day, Baha Yom, I will come to radiate your light, Halal, according to, and I want to point something out here, just mm-hmm. like Halal means light,
mm-hmm.
you know, just like Halaluyah
uh-huh.
means let Yahweh's light be radiated.
Mm-hmm.
I do not believe that Satan's name is Hillel ben Shikar, because he's describing a bright, shiny object, the morning sun.
Yeah.
And I do think it's Halal ben Shikar for that very reason.
Yeah.
And I think that he gets a kick out of the Muslims eating Halal food every bit as much as he gets a kick out of the Christians prostrating themselves in front of a pagan symbol like a cross. I just wanted to throw that out there.
Okay.
But
I got a thought on that. But we'll go ahead and finish this.
Go ahead. No, you got a thought. Go ahead. Kick the road.
Well, no, I was looking. What I did on 164, when I came to that, he's got it translated as shining brightly, shining your light. And there's two words you can dig up with the symbols for Halal, and this one threw me off, because the first one I used a chet, and a chet is the one that looks like a little fence. You know, it's like a Roman numeral 3. It's a little fence.
Yeah.
And it's a het, H-H-E-T, or a chet, C-H-E-T. Later it was called a chet, but originally a het. And when you go and you break into L's, or two lambs, two staffs.
Ameds.
Right, uh-huh, Lemaitre, exactly. And so I did that one, and then I said, well, gosh, there's no, man, not thinking. I just quickly wrote that one down because I was familiar with that one. I wrote it down, and I looked up everywhere I could look up, and I can't find anything about light. And I said, well, dadgum, something's wrong here. What's going on? And then I went back and checked it out again, and, of course, the other Halal, the one that's being translated here, is the one that means shine. So there's a couple of them in there. The Halal, the other one, is absolutely Satan. The first one with the chet.
Mm-hmm.
So if you go through that, some of the definitions on that one are to a demon, to defile, a flute player, a musician. You know, he had his
passion. And how is that pronounced? How is it pronounced?
It could be Chalal. It could be Ha. Lal, but it's almost exactly the same the way I can pronounce it. There's probably a little nuanced difference that I can't quite figure out, but they're spelled different in that the first H sound is the difference between the chet and the H sound with a hey, which is the figure standing up. The one that's being the one that means shine is the one with the hey that starts it out. Hey.
Yeah, well, it is a morning. It is the.
Well, yeah,
Halal,
he's the morning light too, and you can get Lucifer is Lucifer came. Actually, the King James, I made a little note on here. It means also in the one we're talking about here, the one with the hay mm-hmm. lamb, no double, just
yep.
a hay lamb, HL. It is when you go break that down, there's a word for star or light from a star. And
mm-hmm.
then the King James, though, translates exactly that same word as Lucifer.
Yeah, of course.
And of course, he was the morning star and the light and all that. So that's where they pick it up there. But that's
Latin,
not in there. That's
whatever.
Only in the King James. Yes, in the King James. So that threw me, because I was looking up the wrong Halal and I couldn't figure out where the heck he gets shine out of it, until I figured out, oh, okay, well, duh. It takes me a long time to do this stuff. I tell you, it's not. I just don't have the brain.
Well, Craig's got it. Halal ben Shikar is where he's got it out of the.
Yeah, he's got
scrolls.
The right one that means light, and I finally found it.
Yep.
You know, so I keep digging, and I say, oh, okay, well, now I know what he's talking about, because I couldn't put the two together. So I didn't mean to interrupt the flow of the sentence. So you've got
Halal is H 1984.
I'm sorry.
Halal is H1984 in Strong's or Brown Driver Briggs. It's
I had it somewhere down there. Yeah.
And the Lucifer
Law. That's what I have. The Strong's 1984. Yes, I did.
In 1966 is the Lucifer one in the King James and Isaiah 14:12.
Yeah,
it's,
I have that. Yeah, exactly. Very good.
I wish Craig would use the H numbers from Strong's or Brown Driver Briggs sometimes, because I spend a lot of time looking stuff up.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's a lot of work, you know, in something that's like umpteen thousand pages, you know.
True.
So, yeah, that's the last. But
what is you guys' position? I believe it's Halal ben Shikar. I don't believe it's Halal. I believe it's Halal ben Shikar.
Halal, yeah.
That's,
it's
yeah,
the one with
so
the chit. It's the one with the chit, I'm sure.
But that's your position too.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure. Yeah. I mean, I've never.
And what
never
do you think, Mike?
Yeah.
Well, I just
halal,
wonder because you know,
that's
everything good in Islam is halal. You know that halal food? No.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, that leads
too.
Me to believe that that's exactly what it is, because I do think that Satan loves it when his name or his, you know, his monikers like Lord are used, and I think that he wants to be worshipped as God, and I think he wants to do it in his own name, basically.
Yeah. Well, I throw a little more fuel on the fire here. The halal with the chet, starting with the het or the chet, the fence. The root means most common use is a person, place, or thing, not N-O-T, not set apart for a specific purpose. It also means to bore a hole through something, like a pilot hole or a hole through a fence. It also means profane, polluted, defiled, to slay, to kill, a disease, to weaken, and to wound. And it's also a hole bored through a wall of a city where the enemy enters that city. Now think about the Garden of Eden and who slithered on in it, who came through the hole in the wall.
Well, yeah.
And
I mean, all these.
Now,
hey,
so when
you're not
this,
painting
when
a pretty picture there, you know.
No,
I'm
mean, now, this is the halal we've come to know and hate. That's the Satan thing, even though it's pronounced.
But yeah, that's
and
called
maybe,
a chet, so you think it's chelel, or
well,
is
well,
the chet
see,
also
see the
pronounced
well,
as an H?
Originally, it was a het, H-H-E-T, and then later
okay.
In the Babylonian period, my understanding is it becomes a ch, pronounced like a chet, so it's a chet. So nowadays they would probably say chet.
But it's
chelel.
Originally a het.
Well, listen, yeah, it was. So I was looking in the older stuff, trying to figure out, and so I.
Oh no, that's where you want to be.
Yeah, so I was.
Oh, okay, well, that's
that
interesting.
Way.
So it is a different
the definitions. Yeah, so they're both an H sound. One is a H and one of them is a ha.
Yeah, I think I'd be with you on that. I'm pretty sure that would be that one.
Yeah, but it's worth throwing it over to Yad and see what he comes up with. But I mean, I'm sure the fact that he said it was light, I know it has to be the other one because that's the only one that has a definition for shine. So that would be the same as Mike said.
Well,
Strong's 1984. So this is what he's.
The sun does shine. I mean, it may blind them.
Yeah.
And it may burn them, as he says in Zechariah. They're burned and blind by the, burned and blinded by the sun. But
All the fallen angels, or the Moloch, all the Moloch are light. You know, they're going to be swallowed up by a black hole one day. But right now, they are all light. So it's that. Yeah, it does shine. And that's what our old buddy Paul came up with. You know, the big shining light flew down on. So, I mean, that's not incorrect. If you're using light, it's just a totally different connotation on who we're talking about. So.
Yeah, sure. Yeah. You wouldn't call Yahweh arrogant. You wouldn't call his light or the set apart, the spirit set apart, the Ruach Kodesh.
No.
We wouldn't call that, arrogant. We'd call that shining piece of clothing that we're trying to
transform.
That we want to put on. But 7 is the promise during the day. And I will come to radiate your light, halal, according to your righteous and vindicating and means used to achieve justice and resolve disputes, which is, of course, the Mishpat, the Moed Mikra. The interesting thing about this, and I just want to throw this in before you start breaking it down, the passage is almost always translated, seven times a day I will praise you.
Yeah.
Which, of course, makes no sense. That's really not what's going on here, because it's whether I have praised Yahweh 100 times a day or seven times a day, it's the Mishpat, which are the seven Moed Mikra, that are going to be the means to solve the disputes, right?
Absolutely.
There's no other way to do it. So anyway, take it away there. Seven.
And, Mike, you jump in if you want to.
Yeah, I was going to say, I just found Talal, so it's H2490 in Strong's or Brown Driver Briggs.
Okay, 2490, okay. All righty. I will add that to my list and go back and see what all these different guys. And I usually go from the Strong's as a jump-off place to the other places, but...
Brown Driver Briggs, but it says to profane, defile, pollute, desecrate.
Okay. I found that another one, so at least they're being consistent there, too.
It's also H2491. Mm-hmm. It says slain, fatally wounded, pierced.
Mm-hmm.
Spelled the same way.
Yeah, the piercing is always the boring a hole through something, so that makes sense.
But that het is actually a het. It's not really a chet, even though they're calling it a chet today. Am I correct here? Because I don't.
Yeah, let me look on my chart here. But
from the Paleo Hebrew, it says hets. H H E T S is how he spells it on the. What's the guy that has the Paleo Hebrew site?
I've got the original name, which would be the ancient Hebrew. Is Hets, H-E-T-S, pronounced that way. And then when you have the Babylonian name, they have changed it to a Chet. It still means tent wall. It still means to separate. It can mean, obviously, to protect. It's outside. It divides. Something that divides, we've talked so many times, like Yad has talked so many times, and you, Larry, you can cut us into a relationship, you can cut us out of a relationship. So a lot of these words will have both
meanings.
Sure. So, I mean, that's not that. My only point is I'm just trying to make sure I just couldn't find light in Chet.
Well.
I went kind of nuts there for about an hour going, what am I doing wrong here? But, you know, the good part in here is like the seven, which is Sheba and Shaba, and there is no difference. That's when they start pointing things. That is when they start to use a diacritical markings to the way to pronounce it, which is another barrier to keep Mike and Kirk and Larry from trying to figure out this stuff.
Did they do that? I know it was rabbinical vowel pointing, so it had to come quite a bit later.
Well, they came out of the priesthood. And the history that I know is the priesthood, when they came out of Babylon and returned back to Jerusalem, at that point they had figured out being a priest is a good deal, and they were no longer lowies per se to administer at the temple. So that was when they were building the temple over again after they came out. Now, I think that, and I could be way wrong here, but I thought that was much later. After that, when they started doing
I thought it was too. But you're talking.
Yeah.
I mean, they go from Paleo to Babylonian and then to Aramaic.
Well, it could have happened as late as the Masoretic text. I mean, it could have been as early as Akiba in 133. I don't know. I just have to plead stupid on this one because I can't remember.
Wondering if you do you know Mike? Yeah. I mean, do you have any idea when they started the vowel pointing to get everybody off the name and corrupt the language and so forth?
Yeah, I'm trying to look it up right now, but I'm not finding a date.
Yeah,
I'll continue to search.
Sure.
Okay.
I'll go back to.
It says it was created by the Masoretes and Tiberius in the second half of the first millennium.
Okay, that's the Akiba's period, or after the Akiba, because he's 133 when he does the revolt, so it's in the second century.
So several diacritical systems were developed in the early Middle Ages. The most widespread system and only one still used to a significant degree today was created by the Masoretes of Tiberius in the second half of the first millennium.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So like 500.
Okay, then it does go to Akiva. Then it, gets, it does go to Akiva. Okay.
Yeah.
Well, so,
but
he was pretty
obviously
clever.
You got to have that. If you tell everybody there's no vowels, then you have to make up some way to have a vowel or you can't talk. So, or you can't talk very well. So anyway, it's, to me, it's another layer of just keeping everybody away from the truth. So it's but seven, they so when you have the diacritical marks, then that's where you come up with a Sheba and a Shaba. The word is really a Shaba is good enough. I don't think Sheba is. I think that's the invented one, like Shabbat, like what we're doing right now. And the what is so wonderful about the promise of seven is it not only means a promise of a day of rest when we can be where we spend time. Now, Yahweh is real excited about these his days, his day of the week is Shabbat, and he's real extraordinarily excited and expects everyone to participate and getting to know him on the Moed Mikres, which are also seven, a promise. And the whole reason there, it should be obvious to everyone. I mean, my gosh, he's paid the price, walked the walk. He's done this for us, and is going to be doing the rest of it very soon in our time frame. And it's vitally, vitally important that we understand it and appreciate it. If you consider what the price is that he's paid to suffer, to go through and do all this thing, to pay our passageway through that door of passage.
Yeah, and there's so many different deep shades in when we get into Shabbat and stuff like that, because when I look at the Shabbat, first and foremost, what I think of is this is a foreshadowing of the seventh mm-hmm. Moed Mikra of Sukkah. That's
sure.
what it really is.
Absolutely.
We go through our work all week, and then we rest on the seventh day, and it's foreshadowing camping out with Yahweh as family. I get that. Mm-hmm. That's how I look at it more than anything else. And of course, I understand it also
sure.
entails things like like promise. A signed oath. There's a lot to it.
It's a marriage contract, all of the above. I mean, you can just, it goes on and on and on. And you find it in the pictographs. You've got a SH or the teeth, the little symbol that looks like two front teeth. And that is my brain is going dead here, but that's the shin, I'm sorry, my brain. I had the SH, but the shin, letter shin, and of course that's nourishment, it's words, it's and old words that guide us. It's also, we have the next letter is the bet, or the which is the pictograph of the top view of a tent where you have one doorway, by the way, going in. And the family home, when you see that, you automatically start thinking in terms of, you should, I think, of the family home. And then the ayin. And the ayin, of course, is the A sound. And the ayin is the 70, represents a 70, the number 70 is to observe, to see, to know, and have perspective. So he started out with the Shabbat, and that everywhere you go, once again, and I think that's the whole little theme here tonight, is everywhere you go, these things are being told on every level you can possibly, however deep you want to dig, every layer you go through, you find the same things over and over. So, and then we did the halal there, and but the tzedek is a wonderful word as well, because it's righteousness and vindication, it's fair and just and mean. So if you break that down or you look that one up, you'll find just, righteousness, straight,
vindication.
Upright. Mm-hmm. Well, think about it, straight and upright. I mean, how many times is he describing himself as the upright pole, as the upright holding up the house of the home? And it also means the one who walks straight, the straight path. It can also mean that. Well, where's the straight path? It's the path that leads us to the doorway Mark Passover and Matzah, Bikurim. I mean, and here you have, and it's interesting here on how these letters break down. You have the TS, which is the man, little man, lying down in a resting position. So we have that as the TS sound, the Sedek. The D, of course, is a doorway, the Dalit, which is a doorway, and we and the doorway home, the doorway through Passover once again. I don't think that's extrapolating too much out of it. I think it's quite obvious. You have the Q sound, Sedek, is, and that is the horizon. It's new beginnings as the sun comes up on the horizon. I mean, once again, that's just, to me, when I take the time to go through these things, it becomes very evident that is exactly what he's saying, and we're all on big, on real solid ground when we read these translations. And then we had, let's see, the other one, of course, I may have missed one, the, no, I think there was, oh, the Misfot, the Misfot. I had another, and let me flip over here a minute, close, I put that on another page because it was a lot there, so if you'll allow me to. The Misbah, of course, is four letters. You have the Mem, which is an M shape with an extra layer like a wave of water. And that's life. It also, we identify that with the spirit. So we have life, water, and spirit. The second letter in that word is a shin, once again, the teeth. The SH sound is a, it's got the teeth. We just talked about that just a second ago, the teeth, the nourishing words. The next one is the P for Mishpat, and the P is a pay, and it's in the shape of an open mouth where you declare something, or the mouth you also use for language and nourishment, but it also can be to declare something as well. And then, in this case, the T. Now, the T is used a couple of times, and you, sometimes it can throw you off a little bit. You have a T that's in the tall, like the upright pole. And my understanding is they were both used interchangeably, oftentimes for a T sound. But there's also one that's shaped like a basket. It's like an X marks the spot with a little circle around it.
Yeah, like his signature, right?
Right, right. So it's a signature, just like a pole is a signature, a mark, sign along the way that we call Zion. Or Shion, or Tishion, is the word, I think, is T-S-I-Y-O-N.
Yeah,
we transliterated it.
Zion.
Yeah, landmark. So, but the basket, of course, can protect you. It can, it's in a protective enclosure. So the Mizpah, which means a decision, a pronounced opinion. And once again,
Can I say something here?
See, yes,
this is the problem I got trying to do pictorial. Mm-hmm. Call me stupid. I would probably choose the Tav there, you know, and miss. Uh-huh. That's what I would choose. But some of them I wouldn't know what to choose.
Yeah.
You know, if it was if it would be the, you know, the Tav, or if it would be you know, the Tet. I mean.
Well, you can look it up in the old stuff in the older translation, and they're there. I mean, the words are written that way. So my trouble is that when I have to look them all up to see what word are they using and how do they spell it, you know, if you just ask me phonetically, I can rattle off and say, okay, that's a T, and I would probably choose the tall too because it's the easiest one. It looks like a T. So you go, oh, that is. And then until I look it up and they say, well, they didn't use that. They used a basket. Now, it may not be that critical, but it may be. I mean, who am I?
But in Mishpat, which did they use?
Yeah.
I would assume.
They used the basket.
They used the basket. See, I would have picked the tongue.
Yeah.
I would have picked
I would have too. If you if I was just spelling, you said this is the word, and we wrote and you wrote M I S H P A T, then I would have put the tall there, not knowing until I looked it up. So, but to be
accurate, the basket, that's the bread of life. Who knows?
I could.
I
yeah. Why not?
Would be the point to that. I guess.
Yeah.
Okay.
So anyway, that's that covers the words from that standpoint. But you and Mike want to talk about the actual passage a little bit and see what you come up with?
Well, I think that it's an important one because obviously what it's pointing at is the means to achieve justice and resolve disputes. The Mishpat, which, you know, I'm going to praise seven times a day I will praise you? Okay. I mean, that would point at seven, but the seven that's important in every case that Yahweh talks about it are the, from our vantage point anyway, are the Moed Mikra, the six steps which leads to man, number six, with Yahweh number one, and being a winning combination. I mean, I don't know what the point of praising seven times a day. I mean,
no. And he didn't say that. I mean, just that, that's such a lousy thing. I think Yada goes into this a lot as well. He says, you know, you really, that's such a, I think he says, is they're written identically. If you're picking that one over that one, you're really shortchanging the message. And it's, you know, that's, once again, that's if you got to have a praise the Lord thing, then, you know, then you got to put it in that way.
Well, then you get to run around looking like a religious buffoon. Yeah, sure.
Exactly.
I mean, because you'd be doing that seven times a day, right? And I guess you'd be doing that if you're praising somebody generally. It means you're doing it publicly, doesn't it?
Yeah.
I mean,
And that's not, is that the way you would think Yahweh is our Father is going to be? And, you know, we need to stop here so you can praise
him.
No,
I don't think that. No, I don't think that at all.
Roll up your fishing pole and sit down.
Get old Tammy Faye out there, whiskers sticking out from underneath of her pancake makeup and all, you know. That was something that I always found humorous. She actually sold a makeup line. I always get the biggest kick out of that. Somebody told me. Can you imagine that? I mean,
well,
wow.
Here's the line. Here's the line that Yada wrote, and he says, "There is no instance in Scripture of Yah responding to praise." Now we can testimony that, see if he knows, but I couldn't find it, and he doesn't say these things lightly. You know, he's probably the most researched guy I've ever met in my life. With all his footnotes and his, you know, and his.
I'll second that. Yeah, that's an interesting thought. It was just, you know, it was Yada that first really brought me to the table with, you know, there's no prayer in the Torah.
No.
There isn't.
No,
there's
I would
people that walk with Yahweh. There's people
go.
That talk with Yahweh. There's people that communicate with Yahweh. There's no prayer in Torah.
Yeah. Well,
that's so important. It's not there.
Yeah.
Well, go
when
ahead.
You get to that
sorry.
Point where you really you're more interested in listening to what Yahweh has to say than caring than saying a bunch to him. You know about now. Let's talk about me and my needs. He says I've already got you covered.
I never got why people go and ask. Yahweh
well,
says,
I
know what you
I
want
did.
Before you ask.
Yeah, I used to as a Christian. I would say
no. No, I understand. I was an idiot, too. I mean, I'm a total idiot. I mean, I asked, too. I was like a begging little child.
You saved you so much time. Not having to. You fill up your day with something else. But,
it never made a lot of sense to me, though, because I never always thought, am I doing this wrong? You know, I mean, you know. But one thing I will say, I wasn't a constant beggar. I was always looking more to try to understand. That's probably why I walked my way right out of prayer, you know.
Right out of that,
You got anything you'd like to add there, Mike?
I was just going to say, like, every time it says praise in, like, the King James or something, it really means either celebrate or yada, or they transfer yada as praise when
yada
no to yo to know relationally
yeah to know
well,
in a relational sense
it's H3034
well that'd be an interesting thing to look up
So I'm not sure if that's the same yada as to know, though.
Well, I have a feeling that when they're writing praise in there, look, they do the same thing with Chawa. You know, as a name, it means life giver.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, it can also mean to make a declaration. And every time the word Chawa is written, no matter what the situation, it'll say, and they worshiped. I mean, when it makes absolutely no sense, you know. I mean, and they stopped everything and they just worshipped. You know, they made sure, you know.
Yeah, I was really excited. I was really excited when about that thing y'all went over with, and I'm not sure whether it was on the Shabbat show or maybe it was on one of the Shattered Miss shows when he was talking about someone he'd called in or asked about the prophet Daniel, you know, praying, you know, as the answer.
Oh, no,
to
no,
that
no,
prayer.
I asked
and
him
he didn't,
to break
he didn't
that
pray
thing.
At all. I mean, he's never asked to pray. He never, you know, he really just, he just kind of mocked them. I'll do what y'all do. I'll do it to towards Jerusalem.
Yeah, and, what he's what? It, yeah, his breakdown. Well, I did a note on that after he did it. His note, his breakdown was like, okay, let's picture what happened here, and really try to picture this. You know, he went into the most upper room of his home, right? And he opened up the curtains. Now, when did Yahweh say practice religious veneration publicly and put yourself on display? I mean,
the opposite, didn't he?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure that's the case. You know,
going
he never
the closet,
said that.
The
Yeah, I mean, it would be absolutely stupid to do that. And so he says, you know, and then he aimed himself. You know, he aimed himself towards faced. I should say, you know, Jerusalem. And he said, now, was Yahweh in Jerusalem? No. Did Yahweh tell him to do this? No. Why was he doing it? Well, because the king wanted him to bow to him, so he did the exact opposite. So basically what we have there with Daniel is that he was practicing civil disobedience. That's what was happening there. Simple
Henry
as that.
David, Henry David Daniel.
Then I had somebody else. I had somebody else that is a member of the family. You know, they were just getting into it, and they, you know, they were talking about Eliyahu. So I just used the same system that Yada had. I mean, that's how I start to view, you know, Yahweh's words now. And you know, remember Eliyahu? He made fun of all the priests and said, you know, their God. What did he do? Sleep in? And then when it was all over, you know, then all the people bowed. She said, well, what does that really say? And I said, well, it says bowed there. And I said, I want you to think about this. Did Yahweh tell them to bow? No. Well, they were trained by Lord Baal, so that's what they would naturally do.
Yeah.
And she was like, yeah, of course, that makes sense now. But, yeah, sure, and all the people bowed. You know, why? Well, they didn't know Yahweh. They didn't know Yahweh at all. Eliyahu was the one who finally told him. Go ahead.
No, I was going to say that this. We've already covered all the keywords there, so I was just waiting to see if Mike wanted to add anything else before we went along. I'm not sure how our time's coming before whether we start the next. Should we start much of the next one or not, or just read it and kind of get a cursory view over it? Or
I looked up Yada, so the one to know is H. 3045, and it's Yod Dalet An, and the other one, H3034, that they sometimes translate as praise, is Yod Dalet He.
Okay,
so they're different words, but I really don't think that Yah was looking for praise. I don't believe that's his personality at all. I really don't.
I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
No, he's not a narcissist.
No. He's not a political actor.
Well, once you recognize he's your father, the perfect father, but all you have to do is keep filtering. What has helped me over the last 7 years of really studying and studying is that I've got a pretty good idea and a pretty good set of filters now that I can look through. My wife is very good at this. I've been slow to do this, but she can look through and glean information without picking up all the garbage that goes with it. You know, as far as she can listen to someone who's totally on the opposite page of her, but if they have a few ideas and so forth that are worthy of some, you know, particularly some facts and all, she can put that all together and separate the two. With me, is I get kind of turned off by what they're saying sometimes and just want to shut down from listening to any of them. But now I've gotten pretty good at having such a good set of filters I think that when I'm inundated with all these different viewpoints from these different translators or translations, that I know that's wrong. I know that's wrong. That's not right. Just like you were saying earlier, Larry.
Yeah, but you know, just because of his nature. You know,
yeah,
his nature.
Exactly.
When I see words like pray or get on your knees or, you know, obey or command or any of those things, man, an antenna goes up instantly.
We went 2-3 days on him, Barak, kneeling down to lift us up,
yeah,
staring us in the eye, coming down to our level to lift us up. And I think
I made
when
five
I
notes
did,
on it, yeah.
Yeah. And when we were talking, when I was talking with Scott earlier this week, we were talking about the same thing. I'm saying, is this a Lord?
Chairman Mao over there, you know. Yeah, exactly. And we know that that's not. Now, we go on to the next one, and he says, great, or Rob. It's kind of interesting. I don't know that Yada got into this one here, but Rob is somebody that exalts themselves, which is the the basis for rabbi.
It's the rabbis who decided they would abscond with the word and put it on their title, you know. So
yeah, they ended up calling themselves great. Yeah,
yeah.
Rob is the reconciliation for the lovers of your Torah, and to them it is never a cause to stumble. So the first word we've got is great, or Rob.
Yeah.
And then the reconciliation, of course, is really a much bigger word, shalom,
sure,
which
yeah,
means a whole lot.
Yeah.
And then lahahab, which is... And it's written in the call participle construct, which is, for people that love your Torah. And to them, it is never a cause to stumble. So with that, you want to break the words down like Rob?
Well, I didn't think we would get this far, so I didn't break them all down exactly. But we can certainly talk about, like Rob obviously is great, and no one should be called that save Yahweh, because he is the great one. He is the magnificent one, and he deserves that kind of recognition, and you could certainly say that about him in describing him. Whereas he told us, don't call anybody great and exalted one. He said, don't call anybody even father. I mean, I'm not talking about your biological father or your biological mother, but he says, don't do this. So, I mean, it's when I see things like that, and then I start thinking about how we've turned and used them, it's very disheartening, you know, that people actually revere these people. I guess is what I'm
saying. Yeah, well, it's hard to imagine revering anybody when, you know, today, what do we know about the important, you know, stars of the world today? Well, they all have, a PR firm out there working for them. We know that. You know, you never see the real them, do you?
Probably not. I'm not sure you want to.
No, then they wouldn't be so Rob, would they? You know, I mean.
Yeah.
That's kind of the bottom line there. But he is not saying we're great, but he is saying great is the reconciliation for those that actually love the Torah.
Mm-hmm. And then when you move on to shalom, that is probably reconciliation. Obviously, someone has to pay the price for our passageway. Someone pays the ransom. Those are good concepts. They're obviously what he had in mind. That's why we get to rest, and he did. He walked the walk and talked the talk, and did all that for us in between Passover and Matzah and so forth. So shalom should be one of your favorite words. It's a lot more than just peace and prosperity and all the things that is kind of bannered about.
Yeah, it's tranquility. It's being in the most perfect of positions, you know. One of the things that I will say about that, since we're talking about a reconciliation here,
yeah,
and we just talked about the Mishpat as well, which is, you know, mm-hmm, obviously that's where the reconciliation occurs.
Yeah.
Yahweh, being the architect of life, could have designed this any way he wanted to.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, this is what's astounding to me about, this is one of the many things that's astounding to me about Yahweh. And what he did... he could have set up any plan, couldn't he? I mean, he didn't have to set up a plan that entailed him taking a beating and being, you know what I mean? The most horrible of all situations. But he's obviously drawing attention to that, you know. And he's saying, to me, he's saying, that's how much I care about my words and how much I want to have a relationship with others who care about them. Mm-hmm. The truth. He said, I'm the truth and the light. He meant it is the truth. I mean, if there's anything that bonds all of us together, you know, I mean, mm-hmm. I mean, everybody in the chat room tonight, I mean, those of us on the phone, those of us that are always, you know, looking at the walk and everything, mm-hmm. it's we hate lies.
Yeah.
And we want the truth no matter what. I mean, I can tell you there are a lot of people, you know, just within the people I know that have, you know, somewhat tenuous home lives because they've decided, you know, that the Torah is more important to them than, you know, pleasing their grandkids or their spouse or their mother or father on Christmas and Ishtar, you know. Mm-hmm. And you know, those are big words. I mean, that's a big deal.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Well,
and, you know, it's because the truth mattered to them to the point. I mean, what does Yah exactly have to do to get people to look at the truth? I mean, that's a pretty giant undertaking when you consider he could have set up the Mishpat any way he wanted to. But he set them up, I'm leading from the front. I'm going to take a part of myself. I'm going to diminish it. And I'm going to be destroyed by my own creation. Or not destroyed, at least brutalized, I should say. Go ahead.
No, just the difficulty factor that he put in there in his own plan was that in order to find out whether someone loves you, as is often said, you have to have a choice to not love you. So when you have free will, if I give you free will, it's like the argument about, well, God wouldn't allow my Bible, quote unquote, to be off, wrong, incorrect, to be modified. And in actuality, of course, he has to allow it to happen, just like allow Satan to go in or Satan to go into the garden, because you have to have you have to establish an opportunity to choose one way or the other.
Well, yeah, I understand that. That would have been kind of the easy part, though. I mean, think of you know, he's allowing you to have free will.
Exactly.
But when you start getting down to the fulfillment of the Mishpat, you know, especially Passover, not Bikurim so much, but Passover and Matzah, whoa, come on.
Yeah, those are the passages that are very difficult for me to read. I mean, they really can bring you to tears. I mean, it's just horrible. I mean, the descriptions are so accurate in the Torah.
I'm just saying there's there could have been a lot of ways to design that. But I think the reason, I mean, he could have set up another plan. You know he could have set up another plan.
Sure.
Okay? But I think that the reason that that's there was simply to draw attention to it, to say, look, this is how far I'm willing to go, you know, to have an honest, truthful, real relationship with you, not as a religious deity either. You know, just you know, a real relationship, because you know you could never have a real relationship with a religious deity.
No,
I mean you couldn't. I mean, just
because it's you're not going to ever be on their level, he's not going to kneel down to look you in the eye.
Yeah, and he's also not going to say, you know, I want to be greeted as an individual on a first-name basis, and I don't want anything special going on there.
And I want to share all that I have with you, hardly.
Right.
Ain't going to happen.
But that, I mean, that is a rough way to fulfill. I mean, you know, you go down, let's see, you have your creation throw you in prison overnight, and then you have them beat you for, you know,
almost
to death. Yeah, just rip the skin right off your back and then force you to carry your own upright pole up there to the crucifixion point, you know, and then laugh at you when you want water, give you vinegar. I mean, you know, and then Yahweh, knowing full well that that would be used to create a new religion. He knew that in advance. I mean, think of all this. You know, and
that's
he's still going
yeah.
through.
I've got a breakdown on Shalom, if you want, as we're finishing up, because we're getting close to the thing. So
sure,
if you want, I'll
ahead.
Throw that out. Would that be okay?
Yeah, go right ahead, Kurt.
Okay, Shalom, of course, can be a noun, is a noun, and Shalom is the verb. But regardless, it's the definition is to make whole by adding or subtracting. It is to restore, replacing, or providing what is needed in order to make someone or something whole and complete. It is also one who has been promised completeness. Another definition is right through, right, as in it's the right thing through payment or a ransom or restitution. It is also can mean to repay, to finish, to a full deliver, fully deliver. It is also safe. It is health, it is welfare, prosperity, and it is written with three letters, Shalom. The first one is the SH sound, the teeth, which as we know is the is nourishing words. It is the second letter, of course, is the L, and the L is written in the form of a shepherd's staff. That's the lamb. And then it's the M, the last word is the last letter rather of the word is the M, which is the water, salvation, life, covering, protecting. Once again, just
well, wouldn't you? But you left out the wah. There would be a wah.
Oh, did I leave out a wah? Well, that's probably the root. Shalom.
Yeah.
Yeah. But the law would just be the adding to the family and so forth and so yeah. So regardless of where you go, if you dig through the layers, the encouraging thing I think to all of us as a family is the message is the same. He tells us like any good teacher. I wish I was could even approach it a little bit. For one thing, he repeats it over and over from all different angles so we can get it. The stalls don't always come easy. You don't get the I got it until sometimes you have to say it this way and this way and this way and this way and this way. And then you go, now I understand. So, I mean, he bends over backwards to do everything that's necessary for us to reach this state called Shalom so that we can.
Yeah, and Shalom is from Shalom, which would have been written exactly as you just said, which means redemption and restoration and ransom and restitution and so forth.
Yeah. So, so it brings the light out of the darkness. So, gosh, this is, that's about all I have on that. If we go much further, we'll probably get in trouble.
No, that's okay. We get in trouble all the time. He overlooks it, trust me. Great is the reconciliation for the lovers of your Torah, and to them it is never a cause to stumble.
Yeah,
people
who
love
the
Torah
summer?
Understand they're observing it. You know, it should be obvious to people, and they understand it's freedom, and I think that's why earlier Dode said that he loved the freedom of the Torah. It certainly couldn't mean laws. Imagine, I love the freedom of laws. I mean, think of that. That's insane on its face. But yet, that's what most of us are faced with when we're presenting a word like Torah today.
Yeah.
And until somebody decides to really get in there and break it down as to what it means, like guidance and direction and things like that, teaching and instructions, then they're going to be lost in the idea that Yahweh created a bunch of laws that somehow you perfectly perform, and I don't know what that really does for you.
Yeah.
You know, I'm not sure what that would do to justify a relationship, which is pretty obvious to me that Adam was made for the purposes of companionship and relationship and association, or wouldn't have said so. Go ahead, Kirk.
No, I was just going to say, and of course, he stated it was negated by the Ain, which is not or never. So you're never going to stumble. You're not going to stumble. So the once again, the promise is good. I always relate those things when the promise, like when he says something is olam, is forever, everlasting. It's always, it's going to be, you know, trust it, rely it, trust and rely on what he said, because it's, and you'll find it if you're looking for it, because it's certainly spelled out there for any of us who take the time to dig a little bit.
Yeah, trust and rely. That's another good point, because trust and rely is always written what? You look at the religious material, have faith, which is a religious notion. Go ahead.
Yeah. It's exactly. I was, there's a big turn between, I just hope this is right. I don't know how many times as a Christian I'll probably say, well, I hope it's right. You know, instead of now I can honestly say, I know it's right.
You
can't separate me from him. I'm sorry, you know. Like me or lump me, it don't make any difference. You can't separate me from Yahweh.
And well, it always threw me. It always threw me that you sat in these church services. I'm sure we all did it.
Mm-hmm.
And you're sitting there with a whole group of people, and you wonder who in there is better than me, because they better be. You know, because I'm not all that good. I mean, they're all in there practicing a faith. And, I mean, how do you get down this narrow path? I mean, talk about having to twist and turn things in order to try to get somewhere, right? There's this narrow path that few people are on. And you're in this whole room full of people, right?
Yeah.
And there's a whole room full of people a block down the way in a different church. And they're all being told the same nonsense. But... what do? Outfaith the next guy? I mean, it doesn't make any sense that I have to sacrifice anything, because Yahweh says I don't have to. He says it's all free.
Well, that's a number they play on a lot of people as well, or that is played on a lot of people. Is, you know, like you've got to have faith. You know, that's the answer to everything, so you don't have to explain anything. They just, you just have to have faith in it. I mean, my wife grew up, well, went to Catholic schools when she was young, and they always told her, well, you just have to have faith, child. I mean, she'd want to know, well, why is it?
You just have to have faith. Yeah, but what are you going to do? You're going to out-faith the guy next to you? I mean, imagine that. You're on this narrow path. And I mean, I know I'm beating a dead horse here, but I just like to, you know, I just kind of show how ridiculous the concepts are. You're in this whole room of people. There's this narrow path that few people find. Supposedly you're all getting the same teaching. And how is it you make it and the guy next to you doesn't? I mean, what, do you have a like a more pure heart, and you have a little better more faith than he does? I mean, you believe it a little harder, or I mean, how would that even work?
Well, Larry, I know people have said to me, fellow Christians have said to me that they felt that the reason something didn't work and something they asked for or prayed for, they just didn't have enough faith.
Yeah,
if I'd had enough faith, then I would have had that Cadillac. I don't mean, I really don't mean to sound trite, but I mean just.
You might as well. No, I've heard them be that trite. That's fine. That's a perfect way to put it. Especially when you get into people that believe in this seed faith nonsense.
Yeah.
I mean, whoa. We're going off the air now. I want to thank everybody for having participated here with us. It's been a lot of fun. You were the host here tonight. Yeah, sure. You're the host.
How sad for us.
And Mike, are you still there? Are you still on the line, Mike?
Is Mike still there?
Yeah, can you hear me?
Okay.
Yeah, I can hear you. And I want to thank you for participating as well. I appreciated it.
Good to be with you, Mike. I appreciate it, too.
Yeah, thanks to both of you.
Okay, buddy.
Now, where did you say you're at, Mike? Did you say Texas? Is that where you're at?
Yeah, I'm in Texas. Not too far from James.
So you're a friend of JB's then, no doubt. Okay.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, I've been over to his house a couple times.
Yeah?
For Pesach, yeah.
Yeah? Well, how's the weather
down
there?
That's good to know.
Well, you're getting a lot of rain
warm.
Lately.
Are you?
Is it warming up?
It's probably 50 around there today.
Oh, I wish it was 50 here.
It was raining. It was raining today.
Yeah. We started to get hot now here in Northern California. So anyway, spring has arrived, and
same here.
The drought's still going on. So
I'd have the AC guy come out and put some Freon in the unit because it went under 50% and froze up. So.
Oh yeah.
And it was, you know, when here in Florida when it's 70, it's too hot. It's so balmy. You know, I mean.
Yeah,
it's
but
just,
you got all the atmosphere. I mean, all the moisture.
Yeah, you're out. You're swimming the water around here. So.
I remember, I grew up in Alabama. It's hot. It's sticky.
Yeah, you know the deal. It's the same thing. Yeah. It's the same thing here.
It almost rains.
But anyway,
Mike,
I appreciated your participation, and Kirk, thanks for doing the show. And
my pleasure.
I guess we'll have Yada back on next week, and
everybody will shout hooray.
Yeah, they'll be happy. All right. Well, you guys have a good weekend.
All right. Have a nice weekend. Happy Shabbat.
You too.
Thanks. Bye-bye.
Bye.